This is Greater LA, KCRW show that connects you to the people and the places of Southern California. Hey there, I'm Steve Chiatakis. The medals have all been handed out in Tokyo.
Back in 1964, it was the word sayonara on that board. This time around, arigato. Thank you, Tokyo. Thank you, Japan.
The Olympic Games of 2020 have come to a close. Yeah, I know it's 2021, but, you know, the pandemic thing. More than 11,000 athletes have headed home to 200-plus countries around the globe. Next up for the Summer Games is Paris in 2024. And then it's our turn, Los Angeles, in 2028. That's when the Olympic torch is set to return to the City of Angels for the third time in the modern era. Now today, we're going to devote the show to the Olympics. Not the results, not the medal counts, but what it all means for L.A. 7 years from now, and what might be learned from the games that just wrapped up in Japan. We're joined now by political science professor Jules Boykoff from Pacific University. He's written 4 books on the Olympics. Jules, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Former L.A. City Councilman and L.A. County Supervisor Zev Yaroslavsky, now director of the L.A. Initiative at UCLA's Luskin School of Public Affairs. Zev, welcome to you.
Good to be with you, Steve. Thank you.
Anne Orchier is a member of No Olympics L.A., which is a coalition of activist groups that oppose the Games coming to L.A. in 2028. Hi, Anne.
Hey there. Glad to be here.
And glad to have you. I also want to start our show with a guest that we had on recently before the start of the Games, weightlifter Sarah Robles, who won a bronze in Rio in 2016. She's coming home to Desert Hot Springs with another bronze medal from Tokyo. Congratulations to you, Sarah.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate that.
Yeah. So you have competed in 3 Olympics now, London, Rio, and now Tokyo. What was the last one like for the athletes? You didn't have any spectators in the stands, right? There was the pandemic that was going on in Tokyo. I can imagine what kind of stress that was looming over everything over there.
Yeah, the Federation, you know, the Olympic Committee, they did a fantastic job of trying to expedite the whole process for the athletes and make it as safe for the local people and the volunteers and the athletes and staff, you know, pretty much everyone involved as possible. There was a lot of procedures and protocols in place. And so it was a little different, pretty much having a lot of your day being relegated to health and safety procedures, you know, on top of your daily training and your competition experience too. So it was a pretty different experience compared to any World Championship or Olympic Games that I've been competing in.
Yeah, I mean, with people not in the stands cheering you on, you're doing it sort of in a vacuum, right? I mean, you know, there's a television audience, and there were plenty of people watching on TV, but not having, you know, the cheering fans, the people who are watching in the stands, I can imagine that's a different experience.
Well, in my experience coming up in weightlifting, where it hasn't been the most popular sport in the United States, I mean, it's come up a long ways, but also being one of the heaviest competitors, towards the end of the competition at like national level competitions, people have already been done with their competitions and they go home. So who's left is pretty much your team. So, you know, I'm used to competing in front of small crowds. And I lift in a small gym anyway. So for me, I've kind of experienced that already with some of my past. But who doesn't like to compete in front of hundreds and thousands of adoring fans? But the you know, I'm there. I can perform whether there's fans or not. But you know, having the fan experience is fun. You know, not just for the athletes, but also for the fans, right? You know, we all have an Olympic dream, not just the athletes. And so I'm sure there's, you know, plenty of local people that would have wanted to come and see this once in a lifetime opportunity, you know, and they missed out, you know, so I feel bad for them too.
Yeah. Do you feel like the organizers made the right call to move forward with the games in 21 and make them happen despite the COVID situation? I mean, they've got another 4th wave, I believe, in Tokyo right now.
Yeah, I've heard a lot about the local people not really wanting to have the games proceed. For the athletes, I have not heard of a single athlete or know of an athlete myself that would have ever wanted the games postponed. We were willing to go on and do the games no matter what the circumstances and procedures were in place, as long as we got that chance. You know, we don't want to be, what was it, the 1980 Olympic team, you know, where you qualified and then you effectively could not re actually represent your country, so you're only known by name as being an Olympian, not by practice.
Those were the games in Moscow, right, that the U.S. protested. And then, of course, in 84, the Soviets, in turn, protested the games in L.A.
Yes. So I'm sure most athletes wouldn't want to be in a, you know, this is less political. It's more like a global health crisis, right? So, but at the same time, I know a lot of athletes wouldn't want to be, you know, effectively known as Olympians just by name. Like, we actually want to be on that stage and we want to perform and we want to do our best and really test, you know, test ourselves and also, you know, be part of the whole Olympic movement.
The Tokyo Games were postponed for a year, as I mentioned, because of COVID. And if you look at polls in Japan, between 70 and 80% of the people there actually didn't want to go forward, even this year. Jules Boykoff, you called the games in this stinging op-ed in the LA Times a debacle. You said they exposed, quote, an international Olympic committee that prioritizes profits over all else. What's the lesson you take away from the Tokyo Games that you think LA should learn from?
Sure. Well, for starters, just want to say respect to our fellow this Olympian who's with us right now. This is a wonderful accomplishment under incredibly difficult conditions. So big congratulations to Sara Robles, and I hope you get to celebrate in fine style. But yes, I mean, I might be a political scientist, but I listened to medical scientists when it came to whether to host the Tokyo Olympic Games. And across the board, they were saying it is a terrible idea. In fact, an editorial in the New England Journal of Medicine, just published ahead of the Olympics, excoriated the International Olympic Committee and local organizers for their lack of preparations, putting many athletes in a room, for example. Best practices would, of course, been to have athletes isolated in individual rooms, not providing athletes with masks, and so on. And, you know, what we've seen is almost exactly what the medical professionals predicted, and that is a huge spike in cases outside of the so-called Olympic bubble in the general population. And you saw people getting together and watching the Olympics on television out in public, and also just kind of gathering, and the Olympics sort of structured permission for people to get out there and live a normal life, when in reality, just like you said, they're living under a state of emergency. So yes, you know, the International Olympic Committee disrespected the will of locals, like you said. They didn't listen to the polls. They brushed off the inconvenient concerns of medical experts. And like you said, it was really done for the profits. I mean, let's face it, 73% of the revenues that flow into the International Olympic Committee's accounts come from broadcasters, including NBC here in the United States, with another 18% coming from corporate sponsors. So when 9 out of every $10 flowing into the International Olympic Committee's revenue stream come from those accounts, it makes perfect sense why they would be willing to have a made-for-TV event. Also, what we saw in Tokyo should open the eyes of a lot of people in Los Angeles. The International Olympic Committee steamrolled local organizers when it was convenient for them to do so. The International Olympic Committee held the unilateral power to cancel the Olympics, and obviously they decided not to. That left the Prime Minister of Japan, an elected official, democratically elected, with no ability to cancel the Olympics, even when his population was clamoring for them to do so. So there are numerous lessons for Los Angeles, and I hope that watching Tokyo really kind of helped people have the scales drop from their eyes, because there's a juggernaut coming to LA in 2028, and it doesn't necessarily care about the interests of everyday Angelenos.
When you look back to 1984, Zev Yaroslavsky, you were a young city councilman when the games came. How do you remember that time? Was it problems galore, oversized budgets, you know, things like that? Or was it a more idyllic summer games?
Well, the big difference between the 1984 games and the current situation is that the television revenues came to the LA Olympic Organizing Committee, not to the International Olympic Committee. One of the outcomes of that, of the 84 games, is that the IOC decided they wanted the revenues, and they now control what is now billions of dollars of revenue. In those days, in 1984, it was at least a quarter of a billion, if my memory serves me correctly. But the other major difference is that the city of Los Angeles refused to sign the guarantee that the IOC, the International Olympic Committee, demands of every host city, and that is the guarantee that they will cover all expenses. They will underwrite the games in financially. They will be responsible for it. We refused to sign that at the time. It was a long and sordid political battle, both within the city, because we had Olympic promoters, Olympics at any cost, Olympics uber alles, so to speak, and then you had half the city council who said no. And remember, the bid for the 84 games occurred in 1978, which was the year Prop 13 passed overwhelmingly. So there was a real anti-tax feeling in this state and in this county. And what we ended up with was a charter amendment that we put on the ballot that legally prohibited the city from spending any money on the games, which then forced the Olympic promoters to find another model. And that model was to privatize the games and bring in a guy by the name of Peter Uberoth, and he ran it like a business, and it made a huge profit. Now, the difference for the 2028 games is that the city did sign the guarantee. In terms of the capital investment, we won't have a significant capital investment to make. We have the stadiums, we have the arenas, and we won't have to build an Olympic Village. The promoters wanted to build it down at an old Union Pacific maintenance yard down by the LA River, which has 100 years of contamination that would have to be remediated. So it would have been billions. Instead, they're using the UCLA and USC dormitories, all of which are new since 1984. And many of the facilities we now have are new since 1984. And we have a transit system now that we did not have any piece of in 1984. There have been a lot of changes. All of that is good. But here's the problem. If you have a major international event, or like a pandemic, some major event that causes the Olympics not to reach its assumed revenue while the costs have already been incurred, then it's the city that's on the hook.
I would also add that we invited the LA 28 organizers to the coming games to join us. They declined to provide a guest, so we wanted to have their perspective on exactly what they have, as far as the agreements that were signed and all those things. But again, they did not provide us a guest. We will, of course, keep reaching out to them and talk more about it as the games get closer. Anne Orchier from No Olympics LA, one of your organization's big concerns has been around displacement. Buildings being demolished or changing hands to make space for venues. You heard about the athletes' villages at UCLA and USC. Are you seeing any of that happening already in LA in preparation for the games?
Yes, absolutely. Displacement for the LA 28 Olympics are already well underway and started even earlier than I personally anticipated and a lot of our members anticipated based on what we've seen in other Olympic cities. And one of the primary ways that we're seeing that happening, pretty much at the most explicit level, is around hotel development. So we're seeing city council members who are working with developers utilizing the Ellis Act, which is a loophole in our state rent control, to basically say, we need to demolish these rent-stabilized buildings, which I should note are pretty much the only form of housing that low-income and poor folks in LA can afford anymore, to say that we need to demolish this entire block of buildings to build this luxury mixed-use development because it includes a certain number of hotel rooms, and we need these hotel rooms for the 2028 Olympics.
Policing is another concern as well for you and the organization. You trace that back to the LA Games in 1984, this militarization of the police. And at that time, 1984 predates, some of the things that we saw later in the 80s and then Rodney King and then 92. Talk a little bit about those concerns.
Yeah, absolutely. So for policing in particular, you know, the planned budget for LA 28, which we can almost inevitably assume is going to continue to balloon and go over budget. We've also seen that the number of police officers that LAPD is saying that they're going to need to permanently expand for in order to prepare for the 28 Olympics has risen from about 25% to 30%. That's a hiring expansion of 3,000 more officers. And we've already seen, particularly in the last couple of years, what a city budget that primarily is dedicated to policing looks like and means on a day-to-day basis, particularly for poor people of color in this city.
You want to stop the games. You say no Olympics 28, but, you know, the contracts are signed. How do you do that?
So, I think there is precedent for a city that's already signed a host city contract and been awarded the right to host canceling, which is Denver in 1976. To steal a line from Jules, people have never heard of Denver 1976 because it never happened. Folks in Denver were able to stop it. This is an incredibly undemocratic process, and so it has been from the beginning. I think Tokyo's only really illuminated that for the public on a much broader scale, but that's kind of baked in. These are unprecedented times for the IOC. And so I think that opens up a lot of opportunities on a, even just on a very technical level to get creative about, what could be done to stop them.
Jules Boykoff, the games will likely go on. What can the city do to mitigate, some of the issues that Ann is talking about, that Zev talked about as well?
Yeah, I mean, first, I would say that it is definitely not an inevitability that these games will happen. And if people feel locked in right now in 2021 for an event that is going to happen in 2028, and they feel like there's no way to get out of it, that's kind of an alarming situation for a city to be in, especially when everyday people in Los Angeles really weren't given a meaningful chance to weigh in on whether to have this. It feels to me like if I were living in Los Angeles, I would want to have open forums with the folks that are running the games where people can truly weigh in. There should probably, I think, be some democratic mechanism, a ballot measure would be appropriate, where everyday Angelenos who will never be able to afford a ticket to the Olympics or attend it in any way can at least have some say as to whether it transpires or how it transpires. And last point, Los Angeles 2028 really squandered an opportunity to leverage the situation. When the International Olympic Committee handed the 2024 Olympics to Paris and the 2028 Olympics to Los Angeles, LA got their second choice there, and they could have leveraged the opportunity to get a lot more money out of the International Olympic Committee. So if this is a done deal, that's scary for democracy. It doesn't seem to me that it could possibly be a done deal with so many moving factors in Los Angeles and the wider world. So I think that's what I would keep in mind if I lived in Los Angeles.
Zev Yaroslavsky, you're not in politics anymore, but if you were on the council, as you were in the late 70s, like when this was being negotiated for the 84 games, or if you were on the Board of Supes, what would you have said? Would you have objected to this, given the way the IOC operates today in the cities that they choose?
I wouldn't have objected to the games. I would have demanded that the city be held harmless on cost overruns of the games and on the finances of the games. And look, here's what I told my friends in the city council back in 2015 when this all came up for the 24, now the 28 games. I said, if you don't want the city to be exposed, then you have to be prepared to walk away from the games. You need to drive a hard bargain with the International Olympic Committee. And that means you need to be prepared that the IOC will say, well, then take a hike, and that you will take a hike. But I don't think the city government was interested in saying that to the IOC. They wanted the games badly enough that they were willing to put at some risk, and today it looks like it's a lot more risk than it was 5 years or 6 years ago. The fact is that pretty much every member of the city council and the mayor who made that decision will not be around in 2028 if and when there's a price to pay for that decision.
So given the information that you have, Zev, though, given the information that we have today, would you say that the Olympics should go on?
Well, I don't know. I don't know what the nature of the agreement is. I don't know what the liability is to the city, you know, if there is another pandemic. I don't know how they're going to handle Tokyo. I am a fan of the Olympic Games. I'm not such a fan that I'm willing to compromise, you know, the city treasury and values for it. And I don't disagree with anything that's been said here in that vein. But to have the opportunity to see in person the greatest athletes in the world as a sporting event and what it represents is a positive thing. I just wish that the city had protected itself. We run a lot of major events in Los Angeles. We have, just about every major event known to man has happened here. You know, the Oscars or Super Bowl every so often, or the Rose Bowl once a year. I mean, none of them compare to the Olympic Games, but we know how to do this. And the 84 games showed how to minimize the expense. What we can't control is what we can't control, right? A pandemic. Something over which we have no control and which we can't anticipate, and that's why you don't sign a blank check to the International Olympic Committee if you're a steward of the taxpayers' money. You just can't do that. No private sector individual would ever have signed such a contract. And in fact, when that contract was brought to the city, I took it. It was a matter of public record. I took it to three of the most able and competent lawyers in Los Angeles in this field, and I asked them, what do you think? And they said, I would never allow my client to sign such a contract. So, I think that the city needs to pray that there will be no external event that, you know, like Tokyo has experienced. I don't know how much of the cost overruns are related to the pandemic and how much were incurred before the pandemic. They had a serious overrun problem before the pandemic with their stadium and a number of other things. But bottom line is, we won't have that risk with infrastructure. We will have that risk with the games themselves. And the games themselves will say a lot about what the revenues the Olympics committee is entitled to will receive. Ticket revenues, second tier sponsorships. And I guarantee you that all the sponsors will say if the games for some reason don't take place, that they're off the hook, that they don't have to give you the money they committed. I mean, business people know how to protect themselves. Cities, on the other hand, it becomes a bigger ego thing. And there's nothing wrong with having pride in the city and wanting to produce an event that would be becoming of the city and bring the world together, but it can't do it at the expense of being fiscally responsible, socially responsible, and doing it the right way. And we could do it the right way. We could have done it the right way. Now we're at the mercy of what the former Prime Minister of England once said, Harold Macmillan, when he was asked, you know, what determines your policy? He said to the reporter, events, my dear boy, events. And what we have to pray is that we don't have any more events like we've had in the last 18 months.
Yeah. Well, it is a conversation that we're going to keep having for years to come, given that there are seven of them between now and LA 28. I do want to again reiterate the fact that we did invite LA 28 to come on today's show. We will invite them again as things develop to talk to them exactly about the agreement that they went into with the International Olympic Committee and how it's all panning out. But I want to thank you all for coming on the show today. Zev Yaroslavsky, director of the LA Initiative over at UCLA's Luskin School of Public Affairs. Anne Orchier from Nolympics LA. Jules Boykoff, political science professor over at Pacific University. And Sarah Robles, weightlifter from Desert Hot Springs, bronze medalist from the Olympic Games in Tokyo. And I thank you all for coming on the show today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Congratulations, Sarah.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Yeah, congratulations on your medal.
Yeah, congrats.
Thank you.
And that's our episode for today. Tomorrow, Inglewood has once again turned into a destination for sports fans. Decades after the Lakers left, the Rams, Chargers, Clippers, soon now, there's a new venue for young people who are classical musicians. How an old bank building got transformed for Youth Orchestra Los Angeles. Tomorrow on GLA. Hear us and see our stories online anytime at kcrw.com/greaterLA. And subscribe to the podcast, too. Tell us how you're doing. If you have a story idea, a question, throw it our way. But again, subscribe to the podcast, kcrw.com/greaterLA. Jenna Cagle, Catherine Barnes, Jackie Sedley, Ray Guarna, Sue Margulies, Phil Richards, Mario Saavedra, Amy Ta, Christine Camito, Holly Adams, and Christian Bordahl, all instrumental on the show. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Thanks for your ears. We'll talk again tomorrow.